Hello there, dear listener. Zach Valenti here with this brief announcement. Gabrielle, Sarah, and myself are taking this week for a brief summer break. But while we're away, we couldn't in good conscience leave you with no bad ideas. It's my great pleasure to present to you a Bad Ideas classic from our Patreon exclusive archive, episode 16, A Boy and His Rock and Roll Cricket, with Christian T. Kelly Madeira, co-creator and director of The Once and Future Nerd. To get unlimited access to our back catalog of No Bad Ideas, check out nobadideaspodcast.com/support. There you can sign up to become a patron of the show with a monthly contribution that helps keep our lights on here at Long Story Short Productions and fund development of new projects. If you're already a patron, thank you so much for your support. And if you're not in a place to contribute, we just appreciate you listening. All right, with all that said, let's get to No Bad Ideas. This podcast features three supposed adults who definitely use adult language. They're also supposedly writers who are definitely not procrastinating by making this podcast. Listener discretion is advised. Welcome to No Bad Ideas, the storytelling game show where we take the worst ideas from the internet and try to turn them into stories that are actually good.
Your mileage may vary on levels of goodness in stories that are derived from bad ideas.
But it's the journey that matters.
And the friends we make along the way.
They're our friends.
They're our friends.
I'm Zach Valenti.
I'm the friendless wonder, Gabriel Urbina.
My name is Sarah Shackett.
And with us today,
yeah, we are super, super lucky to have a guest with us in the studio today.
The one and only Christian T. Kelly Madeira.
As far as I know. Hi. Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for being here.
I'm very excited. Do you know what this means for me? Is that
what does this mean for you?
My wife is finally going to think I'm cool.
Ooh,
oh, yeah.
that's what I'm most excited.
I think
about.
You mean that your wife is finally going to realize how cool you are.
The extent of the coolness.
It stretches far.
Christian, who definitely had like amazing, cool bona fides before he came on this podcast, is the director and co-creator of The Once and Future Nerd, a quite awesome audio drama podcast.
Well, if you have not checked
that out, we highly, highly, highly recommend
it. Yeah, new episodes in March the 24th,
yep,
I think?
March 24th is our new crop of episodes.
Outstanding.
Which means that you have about 5 weeks in which to binge all of the existing episodes, and that's like a nice, solid, short enough that you get the adrenaline rush, but like not so short that you have to actually push yourself to make that binge complete.
Yeah,
that
seems about right. Yeah, yeah.
Hell yeah.
Okay, we should do the thing.
Well, what is the thing, Sarah? What are we doing?
The thing that we do.
Anyone that might be new here.
If you've just happened to tune into this episode because you know how cool Christian is, is that we play a game where one of us, today it is me, brings an idea from the internet that could in some way be construed as a bad idea.
Mm-hmm.
Just something that someone did or that some fact that just seems bad. To the other three people sitting here who have not heard this idea before, and then these fine gentlemen will have 30 minutes, just 30 minutes, to turn it into a good story, or at least the pitch for a good story.
I appreciate your restraint in saying these gentlemen instead of like these sacrificial lambs.
That was implied.
All right, well... Sarah, in that case, why don't you get us started? What is the origin of this bad
Actually,
idea that you have found this
I'm
week?
I'm quite tickled because this idea comes from The Atlantic. They have a science section, The Atlantic does.
Do they now?
And I was so taken by this headline that I kind
Where
of
are you?
I had to, to bring it. So this uh, this actually relates to a news story that I found fascinating at the time, and this is a cool follow-up to it.
And dear listeners, you'll be able to find a link to this article in the description for this episode.
And I highly recommend going to it because there are not only pictures, but sounds for you to listen to. Because the title of this article is Animals Keep Creating Mysteries by Sounding Weird.
What? Wait, what?
I'm stoked as the owner of a weird sounding animal.
Yeah. The subheader for this is the Cuban cricket crisis is the latest.
The alliteration is just priceless.
That's what I think of when I think of crisis in Cuba.
For sure. 100%.
Cuban cricket crisis.
And triple C. We're not talking about the sport. We're talking about
the sport. Get ready. Because it's only the latest in a long history of human animal misunderstandings. In late 2016. American diplomats living in Cuba started hearing a strange noise in their homes. It was high-pitched, deafening, and persistent, and no one could work out where it was coming from. In the following years, the mystery ballooned into an international incident. Many of the diplomats experienced dizziness, insomnia, hearing loss, and other troubling symptoms. A team from the University of Pennsylvania examined 21 affected people and concluded that they had, quote, sustained injury to widespread brain networks.
Holy shit.
Based on evidence that other neurologists said was, quote, almost unbelievably flimsy, end quote. Donald Trump, without evidence, accused Cuba of being responsible.
That's unsurprising.
A very expected turn, but also a turn.
I mean, no, and I remember this story coming out of like,
I don't. Where was I?
I vaguely remember. I was like, oh, that's weird. I'm going to keep scrolling. Yeah. Until
I mean, a lot of things were happening in 2017. various parties argued that the strange noise was the result of a sonic weapon, a microwave attack, or malfunctioning eavesdropping equipment. But when the biologist Alexander Stubbs heard a recording uploaded by the Associated Press, he heard not mechanical bugs, but biological ones. He realized that the noise sounded like the insects he used to hear while doing field work in the Caribbean. Together with Fernando Montalegre Z, an expert on entomological acoustics, Stubbs scoured an online database of insect recordings. As first reported by Carl Zimmer in the New York Times, they found that one species, the Indies short-tailed cricket, makes a call that's indistinguishable from the enigmatic Cuban recording. The duo has written a paper that describes their findings and are set to submit it to a journal for formal peer review. After analyzing similar recordings, the Cuban government has also pointed the finger at crickets. But they blamed the wrong species, the one whose song sounds very different even to untrained ears. By contrast, the song of the Indies short-tailed cricket matches the Cuban noise in several telltale ways. Both are the loudest at a frequency of 7 kilohertz, roughly an octave beyond the highest notes on a piano. Jesus. Both consists of pulses that repeat 180 times a second. Both each pulse consists of 30 oscillations, which become slightly lower in pitch as they die away. Only one thing didn't match. The pulses in the AP recording were more erratic and variable than those of most insects. But that, Stubbs thinks, is because the cricket's call was probably echoing off the surfaces of an indoor space, creating several sound streams that interfered with one another. When he played the recording the cricket's call indoors, the results matched the Cuban noise even more closely. Cricket behavior could also explain another mysterious detail of the Cuban incident. Several diplomats claimed that the sound abruptly stopped when they entered a room or moved around. That's, quote, consistent with an insect stopping a call when threatened, Stubbs and Montalegre Z write. Of course, diplomats could have been attacked in some other way, or their symptoms might be the result of a mass psychosomatic illness. Diplomats in China also reported mysterious sounds and symptoms still unexplained. But for now, it seems that the noise at the heart of the Cuban incidents probably had a benign origin. Somewhat ironically, the first diplomats to hear the noise was tantalizingly close to the right answer. As reported by ProPublica, he blamed cicadas, which are not crickets, but also do sing. Cicadas don't sound like that, his neighbor reportedly said. It's too mechanical sounding. But the Indies short-tailed cricket is no ordinary singing insect. It has the fastest pulse repetition rate of any cricket in the Caribbean and North America. Have a listen, and I encourage you to do so. It sounds pretty mechanical. The cricket story reminds me of a very similar saga. The Sausalito hum. Back in the 1980s, just across the bay from San Francisco, the people of Sausalito were kept awake by a loud, rumbling hum, which reverberated through the walls of expensive houseboats. Some thought it was effluent being pumped from a sewage pipe. Others blamed a cable recently laid by an electric company. Yet others suspected Russian submarines. But John McCusker, But John McCusker from the California Academy of Sciences eventually showed that the hum was the song of a male plainfin midshipman, a type of toadfish. These noises sound strange, unnatural, even mechanical, because most of us have no idea what the vast majority of animals sound like. Here, for example,
what do you mean, cows go moo?
I'm gonna get to this.
End of story.
So then the article lists some sounds of lynx that sound, quote, like drunk banshees, or a bushtail. Yeah, a bushtail possum that sounds like grinding machinery, or some puffins that can sound like chainsaws. Cheetahs chirp, koalas and alligators bellow, barn owls make ungodly screeches, tarmingas, whatever those are, sound like cartoon characters. Our unfamiliarity with these calls is a boon for movie makers, who can blend the vocal stylings of actual creatures into the calls of imagined ones. To make the hoots and rasps of the velociraptors in Jurassic Park, sound technicians mixed together cranes, geese, dolphins, which is where the scream comes from, walruses, and, I love this fact, tortoises having sex.
Checks out.
The Sausalito hum and the Cuban sonic attack represent collisions between our limited experience of nature's soundscape and its full clamorous extent. Grunts, wails, thrums, mechanical whirls. We grow up listening to the barks and meows of pets, the moos and oinks of old McDonald's farm,
tweets and chirps. I forgot about them. Okay, now it's full story.
The tweets and chirps of dawn choruses, but as long as our conception of natural noises is based on only this thin sliver of species, perfectly standard animal noises will continue to sound like news to us, even if they're not so mysterious after all.
Okay, wow. Well,
so that was a lot.
Set a timer. Let's go.
I will set a timer. You have lots of options to play with, but Cuban Cricket Crisis is a great title for something. That's all I'll say.
So 1 second. So I'm... like, I want to parse out the... what the pieces of, like, that cricket incident were. But first I want to just, like, put our finger on... what the bad idea is. The bad idea is our lack of knowledge about human sounds.
Well done. We are the bad idea.
Cool. Just wanted to make sure that we were straight about that.
Yeah.
Okay. Now let's go back to Cuba for a moment. Let's go back to those haunted shores.
Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah. So it's early 2017.
Yeah. Like you do.
There are diplomats in Cuba, like you do.
And they start to hear some weird noises.
They start to hear weird noises and start like... either psychosomatically or really getting sick from it.
And like neurologically sick.
Like nausea, balance issues, dizziness, that kind of sick.
And so for a while, the dominant theory, including as presented by El Trump Presidente.
Yes, is that one.
That they are under like subsonic attack by some evil force.
That someone has created a sonic weapon. And is targeting American diplomats.
In Cuba.
Or that someone has perfected a microwave. This is all stuff that DARPA is probably working on, right?
That's scary that, you know, somebody would be like, yeah, you definitely have these things that we definitely didn't already make.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Or that we're trying to make work. Well, Russia, yeah, like, how'd you do it?
You definitely didn't beat us to the... you definitely didn't
do this thing.
No, so, like, I love that idea of, like, these, like, military contractors being, like, how dare you attack someone's, like, delicate nervous system with subsonic sounds frequency 128 to 129.
Killing prisoners on
the table.
Like, we would never do exactly that at those frequencies.
Yeah, if you didn't pay us the licensing fee, you don't get to kill us like this.
And there's, like, this moment, I feel like it was early 2017, where this sort of hit the news, where it was like, people are getting attacked in Cuba, and we don't know why or how. And this biologist, hears the sounds that have been recorded by the AP. He's like, that is a cricket, y'all.
Right. Like, that is Mother Nature's subsonic weapon.
Yes. Mm. And so he and a partner who specialize in insect acoustics have now published a paper on that fact, refuting
El Presidente.
Yes. Baseless, or, you know, we don't know what happened with the diplomats in Cuba, but like refuting the theory that these people were attacked.
Yeah. Huh. You know what this reminds me of? Do you guys know the like bloop recording?
Yes.
You know what this is? And like, this is now disproven, right? Like, most people have now been like, no, this is not.
I don't know the bloop recording.
Yeah, explain the bloop recording.
So this is, I believe, in the 90s? Question mark?
I'm not sure.
Oceanographers picked up this sound from somewhere in the South Atlantic, I believe. Just one of those, like...
Let me guess. It sounded like bloop.
Well, it's one of those, like, it's kind of this, like, very weird, like, kind
hard
of long, drawn-out rumble. Yeah. But if you kind of speed it up a lot, yes, it sounded like bloop.
Yeah, it's very deep. And if you speed it up, I think, to, like, four times, it sounds like just, like, a big plop in the middle of the ocean.
Yeah.
Wow.
And... for a variety of complicated oceanographer sound reasons, they were like, number one, this is consistent with the kinds of noises that something makes if it's alive. Like, this sounds like a living thing did it. And then there was also like, but this is complicated because for something to make this kind of noise, it would need to be about five times the size of a blue whale.
Yeah. So, and everyone who believes Cthulhu, in the Loch Ness Monster, yeah, or Cthulhu, right, or...
like, yeah, like all the Lovecraft societies around the world, like, you know, did a fist pump on the day that, like, the bloop.
What a weird thing to do a fist pump about, right? Yes, there are eldritch abominations in the ocean.
Our death is going to be so horrifying. Score.
Yes.
Oh, man.
And I think that, like, in the time since then, a couple of people have come out and sort of been like, actually, that is a very simplistic recording of this, that, and the other. It was probably just, you know, like ocean waves bouncing back and forth. Like, there's probably not a gigantic sea monster somewhere in the South Atlantic.
Right.
Bumming out everyone's joyride.
I know.
But hearing stuff like this makes me think about, like, those golden days when I believed that there was a gigantic sea dragon hiding out somewhere in the South Atlantic that could only be detected by the subsonic rumble that it makes.
Yeah.
Drums in the deep.
I there's something I wanted to say, but it feels like cheating if we're not on the clock. I don't know if I should.
We are definitely on the clock.
Oh, yeah. But guys, the clock is running. 24 minutes. That is so much time.
Okay, all right. I'm going to say this, that I'm not especially interested in, like, it actually was an attack by Cuba on the U.S.
Yeah.
But I will say, because this is a piece of information that I love, but I love the idea that crickets would be a cover story for the actual attack, because, and I read this, and it might be total BS. I don't know if it's true, but I read somewhere, it was probably on like a cracked list or something, but that, you know, the idea that carrots improve your eyesight. Well, they actually help you, like, retain your night vision as you get older.
Mm-hmm.
But we didn't know that when British scientists started telling people that in the early 40s.
Huh.
It happened to be sort of true, but British scientists and doctors just started telling people that. And the reason they just started telling people that was because it was during the Battle of Britain, and they had invented radar, and they knew that Germany was going to realize they were losing a lot more planes at night.
Whoa.
But they didn't want them to know why they were losing a lot more.
So Britain eats lots of carrots.
Yeah, they said, hey, our pilots eat a lot of carrots, and it helps their eyesight. So too bad, Germany.
Whoa,
and then
that's
the RAF
wild.
Pilots had to eat a bunch of carrots.
Right. Yeah, I guess so, yeah.
That's great. Wow. I hadn't heard that story.
Yeah. So okay. I do like that aspect of, like, use. I don't want to, like, I don't, I just, at the risk of tipping my hand politically, I don't love the idea that, like, yes, Cuba is actually evilly plotting against U.S. diplomats, and
well,
Trump
could,
was right.
You could set it somewhere else. You guys could set it in the U.S.
Right. Like, it could be, like, the government of Seattle is evilly plotting to attack benevolent delegates. Okay, so here's my pitch.
Can also be on Planet Bloop.
It can also be.
We haven't said anything on Planet Bloop, so that's
the ocean
totally
planet
viable.
Bloop.
Yeah, yeah.
Where there's something alive in the ocean.
Okay, so it would be something like Carl Sagan's Contact or the film derived thereof, okay, where there is some force. Could be aliens, could be Cthulhu, could be something that is through this subsonic message, trying to send a message to humans, something from the great beyond is reaching out and contacting people.
Okay.
And these people, you know, like they bring in like the world's best like decoders, and you know, the team from Arrival gets like brought in to decode the message. But then they're like, well, fuck, we need to keep this secret from like everyone. Like, what do we do? Cut to our protagonists, the two guys that have to come up with a cover story for all this up. And they have to be like, I don't know, say that it is crickets. Sure, why not? There's crickets.
Right.
And it's the two of them trying to sell to everyone that, like, you know, this like weird sonic wave that is like reaching out, and like certain people are affected by it. Certain people are having their nervous system disabled. They're just like crickets. Definitely just crickets.
If we go that route, I'm very interested. Like, I want to have like a really cool hook as to what the waves are at. Like, what is the message being sent that is now being covered up? Like, I would love for that to be really interesting. The other thing I just want to throw out there so we have it to chew on.
Please.
Is there is a part of me that's like, what if there's a like a Pixar or DreamWorks movie about the cricket? Because the idea that like
that's
it's
cute.
Like the loudest,
I like that.
It's like the loudest, shrillest, most mechanical sounding cricket in the world who has to like, I don't know what he has to do, but the idea that like he finally finds his voice or whatever.
No, it's like it's like
sweet.
Sing, but
yes,
with insects.
Yeah, but the like the B plot is this diplomatic crisis that he's inadvertently created. That, like,
I would
Ratatouille
watch
style.
The crap out of a Pixar movie that included a diplomatic crisis, just so you know, Pixar.
Yeah,
you can have that one for free.
Yeah, right.
I have a stupid contribution.
Oh, no, which is, please.
I just did the Pixar cricket
thing. I've just been bemused this entire time by the possibility of a Gravity Falls episode where McGucket, the crazy village scientist, builds an army of shitty robots.
Okay.
That make a sound that makes everybody sick.
Okay.
And we think it's the crickets, but really it's an army of tiny shooting robots.
Or all of the crickets end up being McGucket's mechanical crickets.
Exactly.
Yeah. Mm. Crickets were never insects all along. At least in Gravity Falls.
That's right.
There are no crickets.
Exactly, right, right.
Crickets
There's just little microwaves that make you sick.
We're in Oregon. God. There aren't any.
Yeah.
Okay.
But
which of those?
Definitely not that one. and I like the Pixar idea. I just feel like there's more intrigue in the other two ideas that you guys
think. I mean, I think that we could like spend at least 3 minutes talking about like what this Pixar cricket film would be, and like because
sure, yeah, but I do like the other one is richer, I think, but
I'm like down to follow your bliss, Christian. And if you want to spend a couple minutes teasing out a Pixar movie, I'm game.
I just don't know. I feel like I've kind of seen, like, it does feel kind of like Sing. Like, I feel like
Paint by Numbers a little
yeah,
bit.
Yeah, like, I feel like done. I mostly know what that movie is, unless Pixar really wanted to go off the rails and, like, delve into, even allegorically, like the involvement of the CIA in Central America, like
oh,
somehow.
Yeah, sure.
That sounds more
oh
like DreamWorks.
Yeah, can we actually maybe do that? How would you allegorically deal with the CIA in Latin America through a cricket?
Holy carefully. Shit. Like, you would deal with it carefully.
Right, wow. But the cricket like wants to cheer up Dower. Are you know people who are having a hard time, but his music is so discordant that bad things happen.
My God, I don't even like. I mean, I think that it would be, oh, like how do you even do something like that? Like, I don't know, like you would need to sort of have it be kind of like, there's like the insect talent show and like the cricket is all jazz to win. But then like these bullies come in and they win. And it turns out that they had like, you know, enormous funding from like the spider colony that like right. lived like further up river.
Yeah.
But I don't know sort of like where you go from there.
It goes way too dark for a DreamWorks movie. I
mean, yeah, no, it would have to like live in that weird Watership Down place where you couldn't quite do it as on the nose as we're talking about.
Right. Because then the next step would need to be that like whoever won that like contest is now like community leaders and they're kind of going like, you guys should definitely visit Arachnidville. It's super cool. And they've got these awesome webs. You should totally jump on them. Yeah.
Oh man.
And then every parent in the world hated the writers of this movie. I mean, so like the thing that I would be the thread that I'm intrigued by is you sort of go, we all know like what this movie is or like kind of like what to expect out of it. Could we spend like 2 minutes just saying like what that expectation is and then seeing if there a way to turn it on its head or kind of put in a cool twist?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, I definitely feel like the very quick sketch version in my mind is something like, you know, nobody, because this cricket is so shrill and makes people ill and stuff that like everybody wants him to stop singing, but like deep down in his heart, he needs to sing. So how does he find, you know, how does he fit in and express himself in a way that people don't hate? And it kind of becomes an expression of this cricket's individuality. That's like the sketchy paint by numbers version that I feel like I've seen.
I have a resolution for that, which is that he becomes basically Miranda Sings, a parody account on YouTube that's just supposed to be a bad singer. And that's what's funny.
Wait, so it's like a producer? No. I feel bad for that.
I feel so bad for that cricket now.
Yo, Miranda Sings makes fucking money. Like that. Like she's like, but does Miranda her best life?
But does Miranda? But does this person?
This is also a very modern innovation of like being the best at being bad at something.
Right,
and I don't know that I want to teach children to aspire to that.
And also, the cricket can't use money. So
like, that was my question.
Instagram views don't really help the cricket.
Oh my god!
Unless we gotta come up with the insect version of Instagram.
They'll have so cricket like Bitcoin. Like, come on, it's an animated movie. We can make it up.
I am all this close to walking out.
Cricket coin.
Oh my god!
Okay, no, I'm back in it.
All right. So yeah. So how do we make that interesting to me in a way that sketch is not?
Right, like in a way, like the base idea is kind of this like everyone together in this community plays in the symphony. The main character is like the one kid that can only play the electric guitar, has no place in the symphony.
Right.
And the standard resolution that we would expect is that like somehow the symphony starts to play hybrid rock classical and he becomes like the superstar after showing them the value of his vision.
Or, you know, sort of goes off and finds, you know, a rock band to join. And then the rock band plays in the town and the entire symphony comes to, like, see it.
Right.
And, like, back it. And, you know, even if, because this is a story of, like, the tension between self-expression and community. And so you have to resolve it in some way where, like, both work.
Okay.
For it to be a happy kids movie. You don't have to resolve it that way.
Yeah. I like the framing of self-expression versus community. That's a good way to distill down what might be interesting about this.
Ooh. Like, this is the darker...
Yeah, I had a darker thought, too. You go first.
The darker sort of Orwellian take on it is... I need another insect that makes a sound. Like, what's another insect that makes cicadas, for example?
Sure. Hissing cockroach.
Oh yeah.
So this is perhaps a community where it is very kind of based on like very controlled by the cicadas and the hissing cockroaches. And they're the only ones that are allowed to sing and make their music. And the crickets have sort of, you know, they live under sort of this like very clear understanding of like, you cannot make a sound, because when you make those sounds, the humans that live right next to us, they get sick. And when they get sick from your sound, they wipe us out. So you cannot do that.
This is the quiet place for crickets.
Yeah.
But then it's revealed that like the cicadas know that what was actually making the human sick was...
something else.
Something
was
else.
A U.S. super weapon.
Was a U.S. Yeah, super weapon,
really,
exactly.
Really, really terrible at war crime and should be stopped.
Yeah. Totally, exactly.
No, one of the hissing cockroaches was used as a... what's the movie where like they use it as like a bug? Miss Sloan?
Miss Sloan.
Yeah, they have that, like the cockroach with like a little chip in it, and it goes into cars so that the people can eavesdrop. Anyway.
But yeah, and so this sort of setup has been used to kind of keep the... this is now turning into like an Animal Farm allegory.
Yeah. The Orwell was apt to the same thing.
Has been used to kind of keep the crickets in their place.
Yeah.
And this, you know, young kid kind of discovers that... the truth, and is trying to sort of like expose it to everyone, but is fighting years of tradition and of people being kept in their place. So really, I guess what I'm pitching is Animal Farm meets Coco. And it's all going to be...
I mean,
from that point, it writes itself.
Right? If you,
hang on.
Yeah, what is your dark twist on this?
No. Yours is better, and now I'm going off of that.
Okay, great.
Does this now... do we set this during the Cold War?
Yes!
And... there's a parallel story of like this cricket who wants to sing really loud and obnoxiously, and he befriends like a child who like wants to like listen to rock and roll or whatever, you know, in Cuba in like 1958 or something.
I love it.
Is that where it's like a, you know, a boy and his cricket? So that old chestnut of a story. Is that anything?
I think there's something to it. The other thing
was
that
punk rock around in that.
No, we could set it when there's punk rock. Like
that's a punk rock cricket.
It's a punk rock. God.
That's why it sounds
punk rock. Definitely not in the 50s, but you definitely have like the rockabilly, like Jerry 60s, Lewis, that sort 70s. Of stuff coming in.
Yeah, we'd have to pick an era, and then that would determine the... or we could pick what music we wanted, and that
and
would
then determine the era.
Build it around that.
Yeah.
I want to throw this in there because I'm not finding out the right way to put this in, but I think that there's something here. The whole thing about like cockroaches being able to like survive through nuclear blast and residue.
A cockroach is trying to like bring about
the Cuban Missile Crisis.
Oh my God. The planet will be for us.
We will be ascended. One cockroach who got brought in to be used as like a spying device is like, wait a minute. So if I screw up this one little thing, all the bigger mammals wipe themselves out and cockroaches
leaves
become
ascended. Leaves the world for us.
That's such a good villain in this movie.
Yeah.
In 10 minutes, by the way.
Should we call it the meek shall inherit the earth?
Yes.
Oh my gosh.
And
inherit the earth. That's the name of this.
The crick shall inherit the earth.
I feel like it's like the hissing roaches or the cicadas. It's the roaches. That
right.
Are like,
but
like,
I think that it's one of those, like, you present it as the cicadas are the villains, but then it turns out that the roach advisors are actually the ones that are. Yeah. Because we all know that, like, all kids' movies now have surprise villains, twist villains. Yeah.
Kids are getting smarter.
Yeah.
Yeah. But okay, boy and his cricket.
And his rock and roll. I do want to mention...
boy and his rock and roll cricket. I love
Buddy Holly's band was called the Crickets. I just wanted to mention that.
Hell yes.
Shit. Okay, gotta do it.
Yeah.
No, right, then, so that's it then now. That's it. Then.
This kid in Cuba wants to listen to Buddy Holly at the height of the Cold War, and also the cockroaches are trying to bring about a nuclear apocalypse.
No, and this cricket can sort of be like, you know, I don't know if they can talk or communicate in some way.
Yeah.
But the cricket can sort of be like, what is this? This is the best thing I've ever heard. And the boy can be like, this is the cricket.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like, oh my God.
It's me.
Blown my mind.
I see myself.
It me.
Also, it does occur to me, this is actually kind of a rich tapestry we can weave here, because it does occur to me that, like, if you were in Cuba in the late 50s, early 60s, and you wanted to listen to American music, you would have to do it by, like, finding the far end of your radio dial and picking up something from Florida. And it also seems like
And like really quietly, hopefully, very in a secluded quietly, space. Yeah.
It also seems like that would be a way that you could somehow solve the main problem of this, like picking up a radio transmission that, you know what I mean? Like somehow that could be worked.
You could feed information through that. Yeah.
Or learn something that averts the crisis something like that. So I don't know. I think this works better than it has any right to based on the pitch.
Who are the characters in this? Like, who is there like a lead and then like a plucky sidekick? Is it kind
a
of
buddy
very much
thing?
Yeah.
I think it's the boy and his cricket, and probably the boy's dad or somebody is like in, you know, military intelligence or is like in some way
involved
in the missile crisis or something.
This is this weird mishmash of Ratatouille and Into the Spider-Verse, and I'm here for it.
But like, how is the boy's story a mirror of the cricket story? You know, like, how is the boy kind of looking for acceptance or for
or feel like expression. He doesn't fit in
or feeling limited and fundamental way
and I think like wanting to listen to rock and roll is a symptom of it, but there's something probably deeper.
I wonder if it's if we are setting it around the Cuban Missile Crisis, maybe the boy could have like a friend or a family member who's in Florida who got out or something, and who, you know, he misses them or something like that.
Or he has a band idea, and it's the precursor to School of Rock. You know School of Rock?
I do.
No, Sing About Democracy?
Yes.
And no Sing About Democracy.
Wait, what?
Because he's in Cuba, right?
Are
we doing Schoolhouse Rock? Or you said School of Rock. Are we
Schoolhouse Rock?
Okay,
yeah, I'm sorry, I fucked it up.
Oh,
yeah.
I heard School of Rock.
No. Like, I'm sure that's Jack what I said. Yeah, I'm just thinking about that's a very
Schoolhouse Rock.
Right, yes. Schoolhouse Rock in School of Rock. That was weird.
So, what is Schoolhouse Rock?
Oh, you don't right because you didn't grow up.
No,
with our TV.
I did not grow up.
Schoolhouse Rock. Is I guess it's circa the 90s, 2000s.
Yeah, like late 90s. They were like
it's earlier than that. Yeah. I do believe, but
like 80s.
But
it's like mid 90s. Yeah, mid 90s.
They'd put in the VCR in your classroom, and they'd play you these songs.
And they would also
they were like
show
music
them
videos.
As shorts on Saturday morning with your cartoons.
Yeah, they're sort of like Animaniacs, Pinky and the Brain, that kind of thing. But they were
PSAs.
Educational.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Like this is how a bill gets passed through Congress, and be like, I'm a bill, and I get passed. Yeah.
Conjunction.
Right. Grammar lessons and civics lessons and things like that.
Yeah.
I've seen parodies of this. Yes. Now that you say that,
so I'm just thinking like this kid's like inspired. He's like, I'm gonna like sing about like these like democratic ideals. It's not okay. It's too on the nose, I
it's
think.
A little bit.
Like way.
But what a... It was a delightful tangent, though.
How much time we got?
That's what I'm here for.
You have 4 minutes and 38 seconds.
Jeez.
All right.
Christ.
No, what I mean...
tangent.
Right. I think that there's probably just sort of this, like, just like the critic... Just like the critics, look at me. Just like the crickets are sort of... Very much like, you cannot sing or we will all die. The boy and his sphere are probably kept in a similar space of like, you cannot listen to anything Western capitalistic or we will all die. Like,
there is
sort of this like, you know, we need to put self-preservation above self-expression.
Maybe the father wasn't like... isn't in the military, but like was a
he was like a radio scientist or something,
or even just sort of was had like a more not humanitarian like humanities like Westernish like liberal philosophy, and now that
Cuba has to survive,
yeah, like he's on his like last warning.
Yeah. And I think there's, to kind of soothe my lefty misgivings about this, I think there's an interesting parallel between, like, the crickets are responding to a threat from cicadas who are responding to a threat from cockroaches.
Right. Uh-huh.
Like, you know, the kid responding to a threat from his dad, who's, like, the the left wing extremism in Cuba is responding to right wing oppression coming from the like the CIA and stuff and the mafia and all that. I mean, I don't know how you involve the mafia in the, but anyway, let's keep going.
There's definitely going to be a villain that like you're gonna have to parody that moment in Godfather 2. I'm sorry, that's just going to happen.
Yeah. And if there's a villainous American, what's his name? Oh shoot, why can't I remember his name now that we're out of time?
What have they done? Or
you still got 3 minutes.
Who played the Nazi in Enemy at the Gates?
Oh, Ed Harris.
Yes. One of my favorite actors. He's the evil CIA guy for sure. If we have a 2 minute cutaway to an evil CIA guy, it's
why not?
Yeah.
I mean, shoot for the moon.
Yeah, exactly. Point.
Like, try to go all for right. it all. How, what is, like, there's no way that we're going to crack this in, like, 2 minutes. But for me, the next step is, what is the cockroach's evil plan? Like, what is the thing that they're trying to engineer?
Bring about nuclear war so that the cockroaches rule the earth.
But that's very much kind of like, you know, step one, step two, step three, world is ours.
I think they create this diplomatic crisis.
Or they want the missiles in Cuba so that they can control them, yeah? Probably.
Yes, and they also want an attack on some. Well, the naval base on Guantanamo Bay is still there, right? So yeah. if they get a bunch of crickets to go,
oh man,
cricket at Guantanamo Bay, so that they think the U.S. thinks it's some sort of sonic weapon.
Oh man.
Oh sure. Or if there really was a sonic weapon that people passed it off as crickets, the cockroaches could be holding that and developing it, trying to get it back online so that they can do it
somehow.
so that they could do an attack, and then sort of, you know, like the first U.S. delegation that comes to visit,
yeah,
they sort of attack them with the subsonic weapon so that they get sick. Escalation, what the taunt, attack,
yeah,
and then oh boy,
and then cockroaches rule.
This is how the cockroaches trigger a nuclear holocaust,
correct,
that decimates all large mammal life on earth,
correct, but leaving
the planet
But it's foiled, because when the U.S. investigators at the very last moment investigate, our cricket has got all of his cricket buddies to do the thing, and they're like, it's fucking crickets.
or he's gotten all his cricket, if it really is a weapon that really does work, he's gotten all his cricket buddies to sing in the exact harmonic counter.
Oh, that blows. Yeah, that's good.
Did we just crack that in the last 30 seconds? I kind of like
that. Oh my god, you have the Death Star explosion scene. The roaches all die. They're all on their back
yet again.
There's the sick part of me that wants to do the Doctor Strangelove ending where the world does end and you cut to like 50 years later and the cockroach is just sitting around and one of them just starts playing like Not Fade Away by Buddy Holly.
Right. Okay.
But then the last cockroach to die.
Yeah.
Releases all of its baby cockroaches from its back, after the credit sequence, so that we know there's going to be a whole franchise. Because there's more.
Oh,
no. Vive la cockroach!
And on that
note, why are the cockroaches French?
French.
I don't know.
He's in Algiers.
Jesus,
French cockroach. This makes me funny.
I'm so proud of all of you. That was great.
Should you be proud or should you be ashamed?
I did not. I thought we were going to go down a totally serious, like, spy meets spin doctor route of a, you know, drama and cockroaches that want to bring about the apocalypse instead. It was great.
There you go. That's the no bad ideas difference right there.
Well, thank you so much for that gem.
You're welcome, and also I'm sorry.
Of a direction, it's so good.
All right, you guys, we're going to take a short break, and then we'll be right back with more No Bad Ideas and more of our amazing guest, Christian. Stay tuned. Ideas back half, which is kind of the more unstructured, free-form part of the show. Just kind of a chance for us to talk about whatever is on our mind about writing and creating and surviving in the modern world, or sometimes not surviving in the modern world, but kind of gritting your teeth and pretending like you're surviving. I'm totally fine, Mom. Don't worry about me. And today we actually have something that our guest wants to bring to the table, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, that's and it's maybe a little self-serving, but I wanted to talk to you guys about one of my
unlike any of the back halves, which are never self-serving in any way.
We did not design a segment of the show so that like the three of us could get things off our chest and get good advice from people. Definitely right. Not.
Nope. Yeah. No, sir.
So what I'd like to bring to the table is one of my biggest creative anxieties, and just hear you guys react to it, because from talking to you, I think you've maybe dealt with something similar. And it's, I am never quite sure what to do with my earliest work that is still public, and specifically the first episodes of the Once and Future Nerd, which is still the show that I work on and am very proud of and plan to continue working on. The first 6 to 10 episodes, we were still figuring out what the show was. We were still figuring out how to write for audio. There weren't as many killer examples at when we started as there are now. I mean, I think all of us in this room were kind of definitely not the first, but kind of on the early end of the bell curve for this current resurgence in audio fiction. And I always feel like I run up against this thing where I have to tell people to start at the beginning of my show because it's serialized and they need the stuff that's in there. But I also know that it takes some time to find its feet. And when I'm talking to friends, it's easy to be like, hey, you know, give us a couple episodes. We figure out what we're doing. But it's much harder, you know, when you're trying to break through the noise and all of the incredible stuff that's out there right now on the internet, to say, hey, stick through it through these first, you know, this first hour or two of content that's really rough. And that makes me really nervous and scared, like no one is ever going to get through those early episodes and enjoy my show. So that's a big creative anxiety for me. And I know you guys have talked about how Wolf took a few episodes to find its feet. So I'd love to kind of hear you, you know, react to that and talk about
a couple more than a few.
Yeah. Before we do, just out of curiosity, remind me, what year did Once and Future Nerd start?
I am going to say this, and then I'm going to check my phone when we're done recording in case I have to edit it and correct it. but I believe we premiered in September of 2013. Yeah. And I think you guys were early 2014.
August 2014.
Yeah. And then I think Bright Sessions was a few months after you
Bright
guys.
Sessions, I wanted to say, was early 2015.
Yeah. And so it felt like, and Night Vale was out there, but it was kind of a different, that's a much more intimate rather than a cinematic kind of, and cinematic is a bad word, but it's like, you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
It's a different kind of thing.
It's sort of leaning into radio conventions and sort of the radio announcer part, and Night Vale was still very, because, you know, they were still, Old Oak Doors hadn't happened yet, I don't think. So, like, they were still very, very close to the original format.
Yeah. So, and there were other, you know, Mer Lafferty was doing her thing, and Second Shift existed, and Our Fair City is, like, started pretty early, but there wasn't it seemed like after Bright Sessions, then between you guys and Bright Sessions, then I started to see, like, an audio drama fandom exist, and then flash forward to today where like 79% of the people who were audio drama fans in 2015 are audio drama creators today, which I mean in a very good way, but
it's a very great, positive, amazing way.
And the benefit is that there's so many, you don't even have to look that hard to find a great example of a show to learn from that's doing something similar enough to you to figure out, to like know what it should sound like in the beginning. And we kind of didn't have. It was out there, but there wasn't that much. It was pretty niche, and it wasn't necessarily doing what we wanted to do with our shows.
Yeah. So, to actually answer your question, yeah, it's rough. Yeah. And let there be no illusions of us providing an easy answer here, because it's tough. And I mean, for those of you that may be listening to this show and haven't heard Wolf 359, I think
what are
kind
you
of
doing with your life.
No. People are busy. There's a lot of great content out there.
That's true. That is very true.
But I think that like the express version of it is that we started making a show, and the first, I'm going to say, 11 episodes were a process of discovering what that show was and what it wasn't. And around episode 11, 12, 13 is when we kind of got off a very bumpy, uneven road and into like a more effective,
highway.
Smooth, pleasant highway into what the show actually wanted to be. And I think that like we started to feel a little bit like that sense of, oh God, what do we tell people about those early episodes? Probably about a week after those early episodes finished airing. Never mind now that we recorded the entire rest of the show and, you know, grew as creators and writers and producers.
Because even if you knew what the show wanted to be in the beginning, you do something for 4 years. You're 4 years a better writer by the time you get to the end.
And 4 years a more perspectived writer.
Yeah. And I think generally, like, as a creator, I've grown correlated to the room that I've had to fail. Hmm. And I think that that's been a challenge. Like, you know, it's embarrassing to, like, when you are trying to share your show, as you mentioned, to like have to caveat that it's going to be hard to get through potentially the first season of it.
And I try my best to bite my tongue. I try my best to just be like, listen to it.
No,
go forth.
And we have, that's what I was going to say. We have different strategies. I warn people. I'm like, it finds itself around episode 10, episode 11. If you're not enjoying it by episode 4, episode 5, maybe give it a pass. But like, you know, just be aware that, you know, you're on a golf cart and eventually it transitions to a car.
Yeah.
But I'm sorry, Zach, you were saying we cut you
off. I more or less say what Sarah says when I introduce people to the show. I also have this whole thing where, you know, like iTunes doesn't organize it like quite the right way. Like if you're trying to do like chronological. And so, you know, I like onboard people to the show when I do it in person. And there was a time where I was a little bit more, I don't know, I had, what's his name from Star Wars? The guy who,
George Lucas.
Yeah. I had George Lucas fantasies of control of like going back and sort of revising history. Thank God I got pushback from somebody. Gabrielle was like really not down with that idea. And I think it's made us, it's let us focus on developing further rather than, you know, I don't know, just participating in some sort of
and it's also just like, you know,
revising history.
And it's an object in history. It's an example of what, you know, you were able to do at this moment in time.
Right.
Yeah.
And you know, one thing I think all of us in this room or would like to do work that is on a more professional level, but the podcasts that we worked on and are working on are still very much like for the love, and their learning experiences and their chances to fail and grow and experiment. And I feel differently about, you know, the level of perfection that these things need to have versus, you know, if, you know, we were writing something for Netflix or something.
Sure. And I'll tell you what, like, I kind of tell myself to give me a modicum of internal peace and serenity.
Yeah.
Whenever I talk to listeners of the show about what they felt they liked during the early episodes, it's always the thing that then the show embraced wholeheartedly later mm-hmm. on. Like, people are always, even during the early rough episodes, I really like the relationship between the characters. I really like the relationship between Eiffel and Hera. I really liked the mystery aspects that were beginning to crop mm-hmm. up. I really liked this dynamic. Mm-hmm. I really liked the setting. Nobody ever really kind of hits upon the things that the show sorts out later. Like, nobody's like, ah, I love how modular and absurdist those first few episodes right. were. So it's kind of easy for me to kind of take this attitude of, look, listen to these first 10 episodes. If you like these 10 episodes, if you find something here that, like, is to your liking, you're going to love what comes later. Like, you right. are going to, if you can see through the noise here and find the signal, once the show becomes...
That signal just gets stronger.
Exactly. And, like, yeah, you're going to have a great good. Show in store. And all that this is kind of giving a stronger filter for anyone that this is not the show for them.
Right.
And there's something that is very just like thinking about the consumer experience. Kieran Gillen, a comics writer that we really like, sort of talks about one of the missions of early installments is to alienate anyone yes, that is going to get alienated. Going to.
Be on the ride, basically.
Yeah.
Let people know the ride that they're on.
And I sort of tell myself, well, that's what those first 10 episodes of Wolf 359 are kind of doing. Mm. They are alienating anyone that isn't going to get alienated.
And I think if we could go back and we could George Lucas it, we would calibrate that, because I think especially while the series was airing, there were some people who were on a different ride than the one we were building.
Yeah, like that's
in terms of emotional whiplash.
Like that's yeah. No, and that's what I was about to say of like, boy, I would feel a lot better if that had been a conscious decision that right. we were making in yeah. the moment rather than a like me trying to retroactively be like, and this is why this is okay. Right. It's fine. Where it gets complicated is kind of where is the business aspect of
right.
it. Because we
it
all
it is a commercial yes. product.
And we make our livelihoods, in part at least, through people discovering our work and going, right. this is cool and compelling and wonderful. And as amazing as it is to kind of have someone that is a listener go, I went on this long journey and I wrestled with it. And once I was done wrestling, I found this great love. When you're sort of thinking about the talent scout that is, you know, listening to maybe 20 shows in one day.
Right.
What's that's the exactly post-it it. That you put on top of your show being like, I know it's rough at first, but like, yeah. give it a shot.
Yeah.
Right.
And what we ended up doing for that aspect is on our like our welcome page and our press page, we said, hey, it's serialized. If you want to hear the whole story, you got to start from here. Here is a later episode that is a little bit more standalone that kind of reflects where the show ends up going. And if you only have 20 minutes to see if you like the show, listen to this one and you'll mostly know what's going on. And that's soothed some of that commercial anxiety for me a little bit. But yeah, that's kind of the thing. It's like, I think it would be easy to make peace with like, yeah, creatively, I made the best thing I knew how to make, you know, at this point, what, 6 years ago, like, considering I started writing it in 2012. And like, yeah, you know, I've learned a lot, but yeah, the fact that like commercially, I want people to find this and conclude that I know how to write or that my show is worth selling ads to or anything like that, you know?
And we've really struggled with, especially whenever it's like, oh, guys, we would love you to submit an episode of Wolf 359 for this award. Please send us something. And it's always just like,
which one?
Oh, boy. You know, yeah. What's an episode that we like that,
right.
that can stand on its own?
Right. After we laugh at the admission price right. that we have to pay to submit the episode to begin with.
Oh, right. My God. Sidebar, you guys. Like,
so stupid.
People pay for awards.
And people pay a lot of money to be considered for awards. Yeah. It's. Yep.
It's
kind of
a racket.
Alarming.
Yeah, yeah, kind of a racket. Yeah, maybe. Unless you want to give me an award, then you're beautiful and perfect and don't change.
But yeah, no, we've had like hour-long conversations for awards, for like the times that other folks on other shows have wanted to feature Wolf 359 or talk about Wolf 359, of like, what do we give them? What do we send them?
Yeah.
And it's tough. And those conversations have gone all kinds of different ways.
Yeah.
And if we had been professional enough to put together a press kit, like, that would have been a conversation too.
But even then, and we have a press kit, and even then, it's like those episodes that we put on it, which though they do stand alone, it's like, I think one of the strongest things about our show is the way that, like, character relationships develop over a very long time, and like the politics of the show develop over a very long time, and I cannot capture that in a 20-minute chunk.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this is, I'm having all of my feelings about serial storytelling right now. and I, for what it's worth, there have been several of like my favorite television shows that I have jumped in the middle and like not been able to understand. I started watching Buffy in the middle of season 5. Like, I had no idea how rich and layered those relationships were. And I think if you're, you know, that there's enough context and if the show sings, like, you can pick out that you don't know exactly what's going on, but you can feel that there's something there. And it makes it richer when you do go back to the beginning. And sometimes I've gone back like immediately after discovering a show, and sometimes I've like finished it and then gone back to the start.
Yeah.
But like if the characters' relationships are indeed rich, you sense it and you don't quite know what's going on. And so you can't quite have the experience that we as writers and creators want you to have.
Right.
But you'll have something, you'll have an inkling, and you'll be able to like feel the tug of the show and sense that there's more there.
Yeah.
So
that's a comforting.
It's yeah. Thought. No, for what it's worth, that's, I know that is like an opinion on serialized storytelling. It is maybe not the correct one, but it's what I've found in watching and listening to shows.
I really appreciate that. I just did that with Sex Education. I started in the middle because Kathleen, my partner, was watching it, and we wanted to watch something over dinner, so we were halfway through it. So it was like, oh, and I just finished it and went back. And it was interesting, have that sort of revisionist history experience of like, oh, that makes so much more sense. It was obvious that they were building towards that.
Yeah.
But I wonder with something like Wolf 359 or Once a Future Nerd, just like how, like, you know, with it, I forget, 6 to 10 episodes that was, like, it's one thing to jump in halfway. Like, I know one of the most affecting episodes of Wolf is Memoria, and, you know, that's one of those things, episode 41, how do you share that?
And
context.
And I have a friend that when that came out was kind of going like, I love this episode, I'm using it to convince everyone to listen to this show. And I'm just kind of like, how?
Yeah.
No,
well,
like,
I might actually agree with your friend, because I do kind of feel like even if you don't know the circumstances of the show and exactly Kira's deal, that I think Memoria is such a good, it's such a obvious but not in the bad way, like, well done handling of mental illness using sci-fi stuff, that it's like there's enough there that I can identify with regards to mental illness, even if I don't know what's going on.
And the relationship between the two characters is so strong. Like, that'll guide
you
through.
It's the thing you were saying, that like, even if I don't have the full experience of knowing everything these people have been there together, because it's well written, I sense the richness that has been built, and that there is enough there to sustain the, you know.
And it's not the effect, it's not the intended effect, obviously, because the intended effect is that you have spent 40 episodes prior to this with this character.
Right.
And then you finally learn what's at the root of something that is tormenting her, and learn about sort of her experience of moving through the world and of thinking of herself and of, you know, whether she can even be defined as a being. And it's incredibly affecting. But if you don't have that exact experience, which, you know, all of us on the show want you to have, you'll have something that is adjacent to it.
I think that I'm just too in the weeds to be able to have that perspective. I think that I'm just too aware of kind of like, no, the reason why that has any strength at all is because you've been hearing the name Price over and over and over again, but you don't hear it once in that episode until the dramatic revelation. So how would you be able to connect
this? This is very tied to my feelings on spoilers, which spoilers, they don't matter.
Go ahead, please.
I was just gonna, I think it's too much of a tangent, but I'm very sympathetic to Sarah's, but like I've had to dial back my spoilers don't matter thing because I start to feel a little snobbish being like, oh, who cares about the revelation of plot details? Because
right.
Because as a writer, I know that that's not actually what sustains a story, except maybe in a mystery, which is I'm always like a little bit like, who? I guess the snobby position I've had to walk back from is like, if the only reason that you're watching a show is to learn plot information, then you're watching the show bad. And it's kind of a dumb position to take to like tell anybody that they're watching something bad that they enjoy. Like,
right. No, customer's always right.
Yeah. What are you enjoying?
Amen.
For sure.
Absolutely.
But I do think that there is, with there have been so many like high profile.
No wrong way to eat a Reese's.
Yeah, exactly.
Except this one webcomic where there's a Reese's with another Reese's in a lifeboat.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I've seen
so
that.
Good. That's awful.
And isn't the caption
I'm
there
so
is
upset.
A wrong way?
No, it says no wrong way to eat a Reese's, question mark, something like that.
That's great. I was just going to say, like, you know, I think ever since, like, Lost, when you had all this, like mystery heavily built into, you know, a show that a lot of people liked, and you have like all these like subreddits and everything dedicated to picking apart the mystery. Like, I think if that reveals details that enrich your watching of the show, then that's good. But if you're like depending on that for the hook of the show, that's less
not so good.
Good. Yeah. I kind of like if, I guess I'm going to fire some shots here at maybe the second season of Westworld. But I kind of feel like if I need the subreddit to understand every detail and like get the full depth of the world you've built, that's good.
Fine.
If I need the subreddit to like basically understand what is happening and what are the stakes in any given scene, not fine.
Yeah.
IMO. Anyway, that was a tangent.
Valid tangent.
This is related to all this, but I'm curious if you've ever had to have this experience, which was probably one of the best writerly, but also one of the most painful writerly exercises that I had to do for all of Wolf 359. Between seasons 3 and 4, we did a special 2-hour episode that featured a different cast of characters. Mm-hmm. And we had to cast, I want to say, 4 or 5 new parts. And we were kind of reaching out to some folks that are in the world of podcasting, some folks that were out in the world of theater, some folks that were out in the world of film in LA. And when we sent them the script, I had kind of this awareness of like, man, this is an episode that is deep in the weeds and relies so much on context that you already need to know.
Yeah.
But I also can't kind of be like, please consider this script. Your homework is to listen to 48 episodes of this show beforehand.
Yeah, you had to write that document.
And so I had to write, I wrote this one-page document that went in front of the script that was kind of like, here's everything that you need to know for this to make any kind of sense.
Yeah.
And I had to just kind of then be like, God damn it. Like, what is the actually one page? Not 10 page, not like, here's the link to the wiki. Not kind of like, here's the 5 sentences of every single episode up to this point.
Right.
But just actually what fits 13 font.
Yes.
13 size font in a single page summary of a show.
Okay. You've revealed to me a big mistake I've made and also an easy solution. So thank you. We recently brought on 2 actors who are kind of, how do I say this? Not caring about spoilers, but aware that some listeners do, and that's valid. We are exploring a part of our very vast fantasy world that we've not spent much time on before. But the political context of that part of the world is like very, very important to who these characters are and how they interact with their world and in everything that is going to happen, sure. We hope. So I've had to cast two new actors for that, for some of the bigger parts. And I realized as I was going through the read with them that I had not given them the background on, and then I kind of had to explain it on the spot and sound like a dum-dum, because it's when you're always like, but then he said this, but what he really meant was that, and that never that's never a good look. However, I'm realizing that we also did we did have a sensitivity reader for some of this stuff, and in doing that, I did put together the one-page document of like, okay, here is so far everything we've revealed to the audience about this part of the world, and here's everything that we have in our back pocket and are planning to reveal. So that document exists, and if I were a smart boy, I would just give that to the actors in the future, which is what I'm going to do now. Thank you, Gabrielle.
Well, and I feel that it is kind of a similar way of kind of how do you put your best foot forward.
Right.
And you know that the best foot forward is just listen to the show, but knowing right. that there it's are like, those
hey, there's 40 hours this thing at this point or whatever, madness. I think it's like 14,
especially like to
hours.
Yeah, get someone up to speed. That's a lot. It's different for audience members, and you know, for all that I am saying, like you can skip around, spoilers don't matter.
Yeah,
they do, and there is an intended way to watch a thing. It's the way that we as writers and creators sculpt it, and so. There are cheats and adjacent experiences and ways around it, and every way of watching is valid, but it's tough because, like, I feel the pain of someone if their first episode, like, is Memoria, then that colors everything that they listen to before and after that in a way that, like, I didn't plan for. And so it's like, ugh.
Right. Like, I'm just imagining, like, the inventor of bowling having to watch a party of kids throw the bowling ball from the other end of the thing like, towards the like seats area.
Yeah,
and just being like, kids are like, this isn't fun. This is dumb. And they're like, no, but you just threw the game the way the game was.
Or like that trying to bowl across lanes kind of a thing.
Right, exactly, yeah. Exactly. Or just like juggling the bowling balls.
Some strong
bored
kids.
Now. Yeah, right. I know. Kids like, these days.
All right, and I think that is. All the time that we have today on No Bad Ideas. Christian, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me. This was so much fun. I'm still sorry about the cockroach thing.
It was an absolute pleasure.
You made up for it by having a great question for the back half. Christian, tell us a little bit more about the work that you're doing. So new season, Once and Future Nerd.
Yeah, well, it's a crop of four episodes that is going to drop every other week starting March 24th. If you haven't listened to the Once and Future Nerd before, I've already told you our deep, dark secret that we take a few episodes to find our footing. But what it is a kind of genre-aware portal fantasy about three high school kids from modern day rural Pennsylvania who end up in a kind of Game of Thrones, Lord of the Rings type universe.
If like me, you enjoy genre savviness, the Once a Future Nerd will treat you.
Yeah,
just right.
we try to. If anyone's out there listening has seen Cabin in the Woods, that's kind of our tonal touchstone, where we're hopefully poking fun at, but also you know critiquing and interrogating the genre from maybe kind of a social justice-y lens, while also hopefully telling a good story within the genre. And so, yeah, if you're not listening, I hope you check it out. You can go to onceandfuturenerd.com/welcome to get our kind of our spiel to get you up to speed. And if you are already listening, we're about to announce some new Patreon reward levels and a reach goal. Yeah, we're trying to get to $500 per episode, and if we get there, we are going to commission some unique artwork for each of our chapters and send it out to some of our patrons, either as you know high-res wallpapers or as stickers or as posters at some of the higher levels. And we're also adding some rewards tiers where Zach, my co-writer, and I will critique something that you are working on and read it and give you detailed notes. So if you somehow listened to my dumb cockroach thing and decided that I'm a good writer who could contribute something to your work, that you might be interested in that. So stay tuned to our feed for, you know, announcements about that.
Don't listen to him. Christian is a great writer. So don't listen to him on that occasion, and then listen to absolutely everything else that he says.
Yeah.
He will treat you right.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you, guys. This is so much fun. I'm so glad I got to do this.
And thank you guys so much for listening.
This has been No Bad Ideas, produced by Gabrielle Urbina, Sarah Shackett, and Zach Valenti. Today's episode features music by State Shirt and Jazar from freemusicarchive.org. You can support the show at patreon.com/nobadideas. And if you love the show, please leave a rating or review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. Thanks. See you next week.